I may have solved your problem. So I came back on Friday, and he said, it's all right. I've arranged for you a fellowship at Brookings Institution. You can get on a boat as soon as you like and go to America. He said, you know, one or two of my friends there you might like to see. For example, this Felix Frankfurter, who I think was not yet on the Supreme Court, but was pretty close to it. You might drop in and see him. So I dropped in to see him.
Where was that?
That was in, he was at Harvard, I think, then. And Frankfurter said to me, well, what are you going to study here? And I said, I thought what I would study is how the decisions of the Supreme Court had affected the development of capitalism in America. He said, what? So I repeated it. He said, wait a moment. Yeah, bring it in. Pour it there and bring it in. And Frank said, wait a minute, I'll call in one of my colleagues. And he called in a man called Walton Hamilton and described what it is I was going to do in my year at Brookings. And didn't say that I only had a year at Brookings ahead of me. And then said to Hamilton, how long do you think it would take an Englishman who's never been to America really to get a firm enough understanding of the American Constitution to cope with that subject? And Hamilton said, well, if he's good, he could probably manage it in 2 or 3 years. Frankfurter said, thank you, Walton. And he looked hard at me and I said, well, maybe I'll have to cut it down a bit.
Thank you.
And then I went straight on to Brookings, where in fact what I did for the first year was enjoy myself. We had developed a great friend there, a man called Isidore Lachman, who was a doctor, but his main activity was music. He had been the music critic of the New York Times, given that up to get educated, get trained as a doctor, come to Washington, but had never really abandoned music. And it was always possible if a really great string quartet was performing in Washington, that Isidore would phone up and say, look, I've got the Budapest string quartet staying at my flat, and if you come over, they can play this afternoon, or this evening, whatever it was. So on we'd go over, and there it was. And the year in Washington, that first year in Washington at Brookings was first rate. Because
did you do any work that year, do you think? I mean,
no.
Was it just reading?
Well, I read a bit. I read on bits and but I really, what happened was I got to know American academics of the kind that went to Washington or who worked in Washington. For example, in that first year, the American Economic Association held its annual conference in Washington, and by that time one of my quite close friends, very close friends, was a Negro called Abe Harris, Abraham Lincoln Harris, but he was Abe Harris to everyone, and he taught at Howard University as an economist. And when the conference came round, I said, Abe, are you going? He said, yes, he feels he ought to attend. So I said, fine, we'll hotel, we've got to pass where I am, where we are on New Hampshire Avenue. We've got to pass there on the way. Why don't you pick me up? We'll go together. And we picked up two or three other economists on the way. We went off to the Willard Hotel. Wesley Mitchell was the president that year, a great institutionalist economist of America. And when we got to the front door of the Willard Hotel, the door porter looked at us and said, you, that's all right, you go straight through the main entrance and up. Then pointing to A. Paris, the black, he said, there's a lift round the back for packages and cargoes and bookcases. You can use that one. And so we said, no, either Professor Harris comes up with us or none of us go up. And he said, okay, so none of you go up. Doesn't worry me. And we said, but we want to go to the conference. He said, well, if you want to go to the conference, I told you what you can do. Tell that black fellow there to go to the back and go up in the lift he'll find there. So we sent, one of us went up to see Wesley Mitchell, the president, told him what had happened. Mitchell went to see the manager of the hotel and said, either Professor Harris comes back with me on the lift, along with the other white fellows, or we simply cancel the conference. So A. Paris came up. And that was one of the early breaks in segregation there. I don't think the American Economic Association ever met again there at the Willard. But what I did with my time was occasionally to give lectures at what were called John Reed Clubs. John Reed was an American communist who wrote a book called 10 Days That Shook the World, the Russian Revolution. And John Reed Clubs were clubs of left-wingers. And they wanted to know, well, I said, would I give talks on how the unemployed in Britain coping, what was the British government doing, in fact, to be of help to the unemployed and so on. I said, sure, all right. So I spent a little time lecturing to John Reed Clubs around there, and I soon got to recognize two very ardent members of the audience who stayed awake and never missed a single word and turned up at every one of the lectures. Two members of the police.
Oh, no, really? Oh, dear.
That didn't worry me much, because there were compensations. For example, while I was there that first year, there was the Homeless Army marched on Washington, the army of the unemployed. But that sort of drifted away, and what happened was that the real down and outs went to bivouac to live out on what was called the jungle, which was the garbage heaps outside the city of Washington, where the hotels and restaurants had their garbage emptied, and they would try and find scraps of food to eat on this. And I went out a couple of times to see them, and that was the first time I ever come across the names of a soldier called MacArthur and a soldier called Douglas. Both later on became generals, but at that time they were chasing the unemployed out of the jungle.
Did you actually meet them?
I didn't meet them because I was running too fast.
Oh, right.
And there's a nice photograph of me somewhere in the loft at Brighton. And me running like mad through all the garbage, with one of these armored cars coming after me. that was the first year.
What was, I mean, you referred to unemployment in Britain. What sort of year are we talking about here?
1929-30.
Right.
So crash.
Yeah. And what was happening in the States at that time? Was it similar?
Well, yes. Yes, that's where the crash started. First.
Why were they concerned about Britain?
They thought America was doing nothing. They would like to know if anyone else was doing anything. Roosevelt hadn't really got going yet with his various relief plans. And then the second year, well, they let me stay on for a second year against the rules. Those fellowships are supposed to be for only 1 year.
Yeah.
Anyway, I stayed on for a second year and wrote a book called Money in the 20th Century, a study of the trade cycle.
When was it published?
It was published by John Lane in England in, I think, almost as soon as I got back, which must have been 1931. I think that was the date. But anyway, it was John Lane. The editor of the series was Krishna Menon, who had been one of my friends at the LSC. And, of course, trade cycle theory was what everyone, depression theory, was the subject. And this was possibly, I don't know, but possibly in English, the first exposition of what, 50 years later, was known to everyone as monetarist theory of the trade cycle. Not a bad book, I suppose.
Well received?
Yes. One reviewer in the Clear Market Review, which was a journal of London School of Economics, said Abrams, in his book on money, has done for Hayek, who was, you know, already the great man, has done for Hayek what Eddington has done for God. We understand him, but we don't agree with him. And at the end of the 2 years, I came back. And for a while, I earned a little money coaching backward students at the LSE.
But the book, I mean, was, do you think the book turned out to be an advantage in terms of your career or your development? Or, I mean, what kind of part did it play in the longer term, do you think?
I think it cured me of any itch to be an economist. That's the part it played in my career. But I realized it was not for me. This business of arguing about unidentifiable things which couldn't be substantiated by empirical data and so on. I got it out of the system.